So hello, welcome to another interview for the Cycladic Preservation Group. And today I'm here with Dr. Erica Anglicker. Hello, how are you?
I'm okay, and you, thank you for inviting me, Nicholas.
Yeah, of course, no problem, no problem. And a first question that I like to ask all the guests and the experts that we have on the that we interview is, what first made you interested in archaeology?
Actually, I started to be interested in archaeology when I started as a classical philologist, actually. I was educated first in Brazil. And when I was still studying classics, I had to translate the second book of the history of Herodotus. And when I started this translating from ancient Greek to Portuguese and the comments and so, I was so interested on the material aspect of the contacts between Greece and Egypt. And this question was, how can I say, intriguing me more and more. And slowly I started to move from classical philology to art history. I could make a master degree at the Columbia University in New York, and then finally archaeology. But let's say I studied for very long classical philology, but I had this inclination of, for the topics that belong more to history and particularly to archaeology. And finally, at some point, I decided, okay, I need to get another degree. I need to go into this because I like antiquity, the study of the ancient world, but this is the kind of a question that I like to investigate.
Very interesting. And what specifically led to your interest in the Cyclades and Baros Despotikou and all that?
Well, this is another interesting story because I for very long I was more an archaeologist, more mainly interested on Bronze Age. So I finished my master and I needed to find a topic for my PhD. And I like in the field of classical archaeology, I like in particular topics related to ancient religion.
Yeah.
And for my first idea was to study the cult of Artemis on the Peloponnese. And then when I put a topic together, I discovered that someone in Germany was just finishing a PhD thesis. And I said, okay, let's start again. And I was desperate looking for a topic. And I started to take notes. And I realized that there was no work of synthesis on the Cyclades. And then I said, okay, I go with this. And when I decided for this topic, I had been one time in Paros, one in Ondilus. I didn't know much of the Cyclades, and but I went because I saw this gap, and then I started to study the Cyclades, to travel by the Cyclades, know the Cycladic people, and yeah, and now I'm totally into the Cycladic studies.
Yeah, very, very, very nice. And there's so much, I think, as you said, a lot of it is unexplored, but there's so much history, both modern and far in the past of these islands. So the work you're doing is great. Yeah.
Exactly. And as tourism is growing so rapidly on the Cyclades, particularly on Paros, is growing more than Mykonos. Now, actually, Mykonos is reducing and Paros is growing.
Oh, yeah.
I just look on the number of swimming pools. So there are so many things that need to be preserved and maintained from all kinds of the stores of the islands.
Of course, and that's something that we'll talk about more later about, how you heritage tourism and how with tourism you protect heritage. But I guess my current question now is, can you just talk a little bit about your current work and projects and, what do they entail currently that you're working on?
Okay, more on several fronts. I am finishing a book on the sanctuaries and the cults on the Cyclades, which is based on my PhD. It's taking much longer than what I thought to publish, but I'm refining and rewriting my PhD thesis. I am a scientific member of the team of Despotico, so I'm in charge of some studies on the center of Despotico where I'm digging every year. So I'm preparing with Janus Curius a study of a structure found on the islet of Tsimikiri. It's a dancing floor. And I'm also preparing they start to publish the excavation volumes of Despotiko. So I'm in charge to publish the archaic clay figurines of the sanctuary. I'm also working on this. I'm also working on several articles, in particular articles dealing with the spreading of the cult of Apollo Delius on the Aegean, on the entire Aegean, not only the Cyclades, but also to some islands to the on the Dodecanese and on Attica. This is also part of my book, but the topic so complex, I divided one part of the book, one part in articles. I am responsible for the Brazilian Summer School in Greece. I'm also dealing, I have a partnership with the Archaeological Museum of Thessaloniki to make a summer school there. And in terms of research, I am also studying, how can I say, the context in which the various kuros on the Despotiko were broken. So I'm working on several things at the same time.
Yeah, you're working on a lot for sure. And you mentioned a bit about your monograph, the sanctuaries and religious practices in the Cycladic archipelago and the Archaic and Classical periods. Can you talk a little bit more about that and what that what that's about, really? Just maybe a brief summary overview about what.
Okay, well, the idea of this book is to give an overview on the cults and sanctuaries on the Cyclades that includes Delos, but also that goes beyond Delos. And the Cyclades is a big challenge, and this challenge transpires through my book because these islands are together, but somehow each island is a unique island, so there is no pattern to which you can subscribe all the islands. You have some phenomena that happens to some groups of islands. You have islands on the coast of Attica that have more influence of Athens. You have everything depends where and when you are looking, and I try to give this enormous amount of nuances on the Cyclades through my book because it's also a longer period that I'm analyzing, and so some cults go back to Iron Age, even to Bronze Age, and some they go into Hellenistic period, and I try to give an overview about all this, but also exploring new dynamics on the Cyclades because like for example the cult of Apollo Delius that spreads not only on the Cyclades, which is something expected, but also on the Dodecanese and on Attica, and and naturally I studied the role of the sanctuary of Despotico in all this, because it's a sanctuary that was not mentioned. Everything is new on Despotikum, and this means that Despotikum had a great importance on the local politics and the exchanges on the Cyclades.
So you have seen that the Cyclades as an island group, yes, they have their own identity, but each individual island is also very different, correct, from each other?
Yes. It's very different and depends where you are. If you go like for example from to Santorini, because then it's also an island that's in another navigational axis, the material culture is quite different. And when you are on the central Cyclades, it's easy to say that Naxos, Paros, Delos, Tinos are Cyclades. When you go to west and to east and west, it's more difficult. There are nuances and there are even if you get the catalog of the ancient writers, there are islands that today don't belong to the Cyclades, like Icaria, that was on the Cycladic catalogs, and there are other islands that are on the Cycladic catalog, but today belong to the Dodecanese. So the borders of the Cyclades are fluid. But what is most important is not the catalog or so, but how these islands are interacting.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because a lot of times people consider them to be, one common cultural group, but it's very interesting to learn about that. So on the topic of the Cyclades, you mentioned it a little bit, but could you talk a little bit more about your work on the Spotiko and then the small island, the Tsiminiti, right?
Yeah, I'm excavating at Spotiko with the archaeological team, with Janos Kouraios, Ilia Daifa, and Alexandra Alexandridou. I work at the Spotiko since 2012. I started as a student there. I work in two fronts. I publish this. I am helping to publish these materials that I told you. And I also organize summer schools to particularly from Brazil to come, but I had students from other universities also to go to the Spoticum and dig, etc. The cemetery, we resume the team resumed the work this year. It's an island very difficult to reach because there is no harbor, but now they have a non-permanent harbor. Because they were making a move in the Spotico, and then they found a donation. Now they have a harbor. It's quite interesting. And the Tsimikiri is has revealed some quite interesting material. They are at the very beginning of the excavation because they discovered some buildings. They are still retrieving the material we're studying, but actually this is happening everywhere in the spot. They are know a lot of things, but because it's still in process, there is still a lot to study. And the funny thing with the spot is every year we think that now we finished the excavation, but more buildings come to light, more things come to light. And
So,
last year there were some fantastic discoveries because they found more Kuroi incorporated to the walls of the buildings at the Spotico.
what exactly is being like found and learned about the Swatikó? Because it's an island that it was an it was an it had it had people living on it, correct? And it had y
And no, the Spotico, actually nobody was living in the Spotico. The island had a kind of a small group of pirates on the 15th century, but the island since many centuries was abandoned. They had just a shepherd on the 20th century, but the abandonment of the Spotico, which is quite long, because the Spotico, after the classical period, it starts to decline. On the Hellenistic period, you already see a decline. On the Roman period, the sanctuary on the Spotico wasn't functioned as a sanctuary. You had a Roman garrison there, but it wasn't working as a sanctuary. Then you have some occupations in late antique, during the Byzantine period too, but it's a smaller place. It's not in the sanctuary is not functioned. And then you have people here and there till in 15th century, 16th century is completely abandoned. This allowed them the island to be very well preserved in all aspects that you can think, not only in archaeology, but the plants of the central Cyclades are best preserved on the Spotico, also certain types of animals. But all this still needs to be studied. So we know a lot about the Spotico. Know that it was an island that was a sanctuary that belonged to Paros, was an enormous sanctuary with an enormous amount of building, with a monumental temple that was impressive. And the Spotico had a big harbor, which means that the Parians could use the Spotico and the harbor of the Spotico to put a lot of ships there. So this gives us an advantage because if you're crossing from east to west, you needed to stop somewhere. And the Paris, so it's an alternative to Delos somehow.
Very interesting. Yeah. And Delos, I think Delos is much more well known, especially, in ancient Greece, but this is what the go it's very interesting to learn that it was kind of similar to that. So kind of shifting gears, you have your book called The Soundscape of the Panhellenic Sanctuaries of Apollo, correct? Could you talk a little bit about that and what that taught you and what you learned and what we can learn from reading it?
Okay, this is a book that I edit with my friend Angela Bellia. She's a specialist in ancient music and in soundscapes. And the soundscapes of sanctuaries is a topic that in general people are starting to touch. The idea is of this book is to stimulate people to think on the music, on the sounds performed at the Panhellenic Sanctuary, on the function of musics, and in particular to develop techniques to read this material. Because when you want to study sound, most of the evidence will be indirect. Because, of course, the music was not recorded, so you needed to think on places where the sound was performed, what would be the function. You needed to fill up many gaps. And the different authors on this book, they fill up these gaps in different ways. Some of these ways, including experimental archaeology, which is very interesting to see where the sound resonates better, what would be the best place to play the music, to where the music would reach people. Because if you think on a sanctuary, when you have a lot of people, only a fraction of these people would be able to see the performance of the ritual. What would reach most of the people taking part on a ceremony is the sound and not the image. So, sound is very important.
Yeah. And so I guess this project was kind of an intersection between the tangible and the intangible parts, correct?
Yes, exactly. The intangible culture, which is something that people are paying more attention, and it's very important, and it's difficult. We needed to, it's
Yeah.
necessary to develop all kind of interdisciplinary methodologies to go to the intangible cultures.
Yeah, I was gonna say it must be very hard to find to fully know about the intangible culture when it's so far back, correct?
Yeah, but not necessarily. For example, we made a small experiment this year, quite silly but quite interesting. We were digging at the Spotico, and then the volunteer with all the volunteers, we made them a Greek dance on this dancing floor, all us, just to see and feel how it would be to move inside this
Yeah.
dancing floor. Of course, we need this was just kind
Yeah.
of a joke. But we wanted to do this in a more scientific manner, registering and putting music and
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. That's also, that's very fun too. So you learn and it's fun as well. Yeah. So I guess moving on to something that's very relevant, as you were saying earlier about Pat and Paros, where tourism is as only growing and it's at its max right now. You've worked on cultural heritage and tourism, right? The intersection between the two, and then you've been a part of a project, the community integrating the management of cultural heritage and tourism, correct? So I guess two questions arise from that. The first one is about climate change. So how does climate change have an impact on the sites here? Well, here in the Cyclades, but also in general. On any archaeological sites.
In two ways. First of all, we are experiencing the rise of the ocean, which means that some monuments are swallowed, or that the water is closer to some monuments. And this also means that the wind also come with the water, not necessarily the water directly, and also destroy the monuments. But not only this, for example, on the Spotic itself, when you have more tourists circulating, etc., you bring to the islands new animals, new plants that also modify the biodiversity of the islands. So with these groups that I'm working inside the European Association of Archaeologists, we wanted to develop a manual how people should do to preserve to act against the because several monuments are endangered because of these things and how people should do. And we also consider what they should do because I mean, if you have money, anything is possible. But many of these places, they don't have money to preserve, or they can do absolutely nothing, and there is no chance to get this money. So on this manual, we are putting a kind of a clear instruction, at least that people can register very well these monuments, etc., to at least preserve the information to the posterior generations, because otherwise everything just disappear if you don't even register. But yes, there are many monuments in the natural elements that are in danger right now, particularly on the cyclists, because the tourism on the cyclists is growing rapidly, and also some intangible cultures are threatened right now. Several traditions, including traditions with food, etc., are disappearing rapidly on the cyclists.
Yeah, that's very interesting to say that because I was talking to someone I know from Paros a few days ago, and so there's this village in Paros called Aliki, and then obviously the main village is Parikia, and he was saying how Aliki was he hadn't been to Parikia until he was 17 years old. So Aliki in itself was a completely different place than Parikia was tradition-wise, intangible culture-wise, but now it's become, one island. So I can fully see what you're saying about, traditions and cultures slowly vanishing as not only as tourism grows, but just also as as Greece modernizes again, I guess. So I guess we did talk about this a little bit. We talked about the bad of the archaeological tourism, but in a sense, if balanced, there can be some good parts of tourism on the archaeology of an island. Is that right?
Yes, of course. The tourists, they also bring, they help to create conscious about the importance of the island. They can bring money and make the local societies to flourish. I'm not against the tourism. It's more that you needed to do this in a controlled way and on a way that benefit, in particular, on a way that benefit the local society, because this is not the case of the cyclists yet. But take a look on the island of Rhodes, for example. You have all this massive tourism. This you have how can I say these groups, these travel agents. The money doesn't stay on the island. The money doesn't stay with the people on the island. They bring some foreigners to make waffles with Nutella for breakfast, and they don't. The tourists don't experience the local culture. The money doesn't stay for the locals. Just the pollution, and this is a bad deal. So we need to rethink it and to stimulate the good tourism.
And I think unfortunately a lot of times the Greek islands, I mean, are not really thought about for their at least the Cyclades especially aren't really thought about for their heritage, but rather for the beaches, the vacation, the partying and stuff like that, which is something that has to change really.
Yeah, but but some people they don't know that that's possible to see things on the cyclists. But on the other hand, there are places, for example, one place in Paros with a huge potential for visiting, the Dilion on Paros. It's completely abandoned. You
The,
need to
sorry, the
go
which one?
there.
The which in
The
Paris?
Dilion, of Paros. It's a magnificent place. Have you ever been there?
I don't think so, no.
With So then visit the Dilion. You will go with you can put on the GPS, you will arrive there. Has magnificent views directly towards Delos. It's a beautiful view. And But the sanctuary is badly preserved. You will have to drive with a car to a certain point, and then you will have to climb and walk. It's not too difficult. And you will walk amongst the plants. And so for someone who is in a good condition, it's okay, but it's not something for everybody. And it's such a shame because it's a very beautiful place. And also Coconarias is not so accessible. And also the place of the Sanctuary of Archilochos is full of grass. So, and yeah.
We can only hope that in future years the Cyclades is celebrated for its both its tangible and intangible culture, because there's so many little villages everywhere with so many different traditions that are just being lost in the
Exactly,
tourism.
exactly.
So I guess moving on to the final two questions that I have for you, and I think it's interesting to just I we've been talking a lot about preserving the culture, right? But I think it's interesting to just flat out ask this question. How important do you think that cultural preservation is?
Well, it's absolutely important, not only for the local communities, but because all the information that these cultures are preserved, and important information that can be eventually lost. So
Course.
I think that is crucial to preserve all this.
And so you obviously you work a lot in the final question here. Obviously you work a lot in the field and in archaeology and stuff. What is one thing or one of the main things that you want me and my viewers to remember that you do to ensure cultural preservation when you're working in the field?
Your question is what I do to ensure cultural preservation,
I know
and
there's a lot of steps, but maybe just one thing, one thing that you think is very important.
to I'm guessing if I understand your question, what I think that people should do to preserve cultural
No, when you're working and when you're working, let's say on Despotiko, what steps do you take to ensure the preservation of the culture there?
In my case, it's very easy because I'm directly working into this. I'm retrieving the material, I'm working on the publications, I'm helping sometimes the people to expose or to write about this. I work directly with the team of the Spoticum, with the Curaios, called Ilia Daifa and Alexandrido. So, in my case, it's very easy, but
Well, thank you. It's been very amazing to learn more about the Cyclades, because I think a lot of my interviews have been focused on preservation itself, which is very important as well. But it's just been great to learn from you about the Cycladic Islands and how much they have to offer culturally. So thank you very much.
thank you, it was my pleasure.